Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with Eleanor Goldfield. Today in this segment, we welcome back science writer and investigative independent reporter, Peter Byrne. You can learn more at his website, peterbyrne.info, B-Y-R-N-E. Peter Byrne is no stranger to the Project Censored audience. He was on not long ago talking about a new series he's doing for Project Censored called Military AI Watch, the dangerous militarization of AI and the profiteering behind it. The series began with one rank to rule them all, and it continued with Stargate Fiasco and the most recent from late May, AI Battlespace, weaponizing the 5G Internet of Things. Well, it's a very, very important series of interrelating topics around technology, around our civil rights. It talks about surveillance. And of course, it goes into detail about big tech companies that, well, allegedly in the name of wanting good things, are actually working on maybe destroying the world for good. Peter Byrne, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, Peter, let's get into the Stargate fiasco. World War III will be fought inside data centers. Let's talk about that, Peter Byrne.
Well, you know, this whole series breaks a lot of ground because you can read the New York Times or the Atlantic or whatever ruling class media outlets you want about AI. And sometimes they'll talk a little bit about the finances. You know, they'll say, oh, Palantir is doing bad things. Or maybe they do a little thing on the tech, like, oh, there's a lot of drones in the Ukraine and they're all being outfitted to change the face of warfare and stuff. And a lot of it is just complete BS. I mean, the New York Times is just cheerleader for AI in the age of Ezra Klein's so-called abundance, which is really the opposite. So what we're doing here at Project Censored is to actually write about the mechanisms by how this works, whether they're financial or technical. And the Stargate one follows up on One Ring to Rule Them All, which was kind of an overview of Anduril and Palantir, which are both owned and operated by Peter Thiel, who's one of the ruling Silicon Valley oligarchs and a force for anti-democratic politics. He was the mentor to J.D. Vance. In fact, he financed J.D. Vance's venture capital firm. Short story about the One Ring to Rule Them All was that there are some mechanisms to defeat this. They're called antitrust laws, and it will probably be a really good idea for those who are in power and don't favor what is going on to wield the Sherman Antitrust Act against Palantir and Anduril because they're making illegal consortiums to scarf up government contracts. And the context of that is there's a huge movement inside the Department of Defense, the Department of War, the Pentagon, to turn over the running of wars to artificial intelligence as much as possible. There's also a lot of pushback by the more military-oriented people who make really good arguments about why that won't work, and we can get into that. But as usual, in the United States, money talks, and Silicon Valley discovered that military money was always going to be there for them. So what we have here is, especially under this new regime, this Trump regime, which is full of all sorts of AI monsters, that AI is going to save American lives, save American soldiers by making war automatic so that we can fight large and small wars through computer interfaces that are linked to hundreds of thousands of sensors all over the world, in space, in the oceans, on ground, and flying through the air. And this type of warfare will take place at nanosecond speed, therefore humans really won't be involved except in the receiving end, because when it comes down to it, who gets killed in wars and who's the object of warfare? It's the human, and it always has been. So it's a lot of hype because a lot of these systems that they're promoting, these things don't work for various reasons. One, they're too complex, which makes them very fragile. Two, when you have too much information coming in that you can't parse, even with a computer, you're not expanding your field of vision and knowledge. You're constricting it. You're blinding yourself. And there's so many choke points. If a military power that feels threatened by you wants to take out one of your satellites, then your command and control system is going to be at least partially blinded. And what we do in the Stargate article which is based on, the day after his second inauguration, Trump had a bunch of Silicon Valley oligarchs into the White House, Sam Altman from OpenAI, Matsu Sun from SoftBank, Larry Ellison from Oracle. And they talked about, we're going to put $500 billion into building data centers in the United States. Now, that article deconstructs that on several levels. One, financially, that kind of money really isn't available to do this. And the reason that OpenAI is leading this is because OpenAI is not making any money. Yeah, they're selling some product, but their costs of training and their electrical costs for doing that training are so immense that they're just not getting a market return. So they're constantly doing the Silicon Valley shuffle, which is to operate at a loss, which means they don't have to pay taxes. And OpenAI, of course, is a nonprofit in the process of becoming a for-profit. But Palantir and Anduril and most of the rest of them are actually supposed to pay taxes if they make a profit. So if they operate at a loss, then they can go back to the investment community, so-called, and get a few more, $100 million influxes to keep going. And so the whole shuffle around the data centers is kind of interesting because one of the excuses for building them in the United States is that we don't want our data centers, which is where the wars will actually be fought, inside the graphical processors, the AI chips inside these data centers. And if we build them here, we'll reindustrialize the economy because they actually cost like, $20 billion a piece to build. Well, there are several problems with that. One, data centers are massively polluting. They use up an extraordinary amount of electricity and they exacerbate global warming beyond all imagining. Two, our workforce here actually has migrated a lot to finance and services, and it's not really set up to build and operate complex technical entities like data centers. And three, the real money from this is coming from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And they're quite interested in the Middle Eastern kingdoms to host data centers because they're not so much concerned about, oh, we want people to do Amazon shopping through the data centers, which, many of them are run by Amazon Web Services. They want the access to the military capabilities. And the irony of it is that even when these electronic war situations are acting at almost light speed, it does make a difference how close to the battle scene the data center is. Because you can't fly like armies of drones and hyperglide missiles and Aegis battleships and try to coordinate them all in what they call, an AI battle space without having all of it be transferred into data centers, via a constellation of satellites and cell towers and, however you can get the data back into the data center where it can be processed. So it makes much more sense from a military point of view to have the data centers closer to the battle. And so they've created all these mobile data centers that they can push closer to the battle, as well as these data centers in Texas and Virginia and places like that that are doing a lot of heavy lifting. But what does that make them? That makes them ground zero. So if you want to get over on your enemy who you think is going to attack you, or you want to attack them first thing you do is take out their data centers. And then you also have to be careful with the data centers because sometimes your stuff is in the same data center as your enemy. For example, Amazon Web Services and Oracle have a whole bunch of data centers in China. The Chinese market is huge for them. I mean, Apple's been cultivating China for a long time. Apple has data centers. So it wouldn't be ironic if you've got China and the United States going to war, but they're all fighting it out in the data center.
Peter Byrne, we're back to Star Wars Redux in the Reagan years, though, with Trump's Golden Dome.
Oh, yeah, and it has as much chance of success as Star Wars did. I mean, Star Wars was just a gift to Lockheed Martin and the Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, who was a big Silicon Valley oligarch. It was destabilizing in a lot of senses. It was destabilizing in the sense that their anti-ballistic missile treaties, because if you can shoot down the incoming missiles, then that throws the whole concept of nuclear deterrence out the window. Actually, if you could shoot them all down, that would be good because that means that nobody could actually succeed in a nuclear attack on another country. But the point is that the technology is such that you can't shoot them all down. You can only shoot down a small percentage. Even Israel, with its much vaunted Iron Dome, only shoots down a small percentage. And what you see in the Ukraine is that because of electronic jamming capabilities, most of the drones are either set off target or destroyed through jamming activities. So both Russia and the Ukraine have adopted two techniques to get around jamming. One is to send, thousands of drones and hope that one or two get through, which is what happens when you see a Russian drone blows up a delicatessen in Kiev. Well, there was probably 1,000 drones headed there and only one of them got through, right? But they don't talk about that. And the other thing they have to do is they have these really thin spider web, thin fiber optic cables that are extruded out of the butt of the drones so that they can be controlled by an operator and they can't be jammed in the electromagnetic spectrum by emitting radio waves that can be jammed. However, those only have like a range of about 15 miles. So the thing with data centers is that they actually make the military posture of the United States and the other entities that are amping up on AI weapons systems a lot weaker because they're really easy to spoof and fool. The problem being that all AIs, which currently the neural nets or so-called chats, they're all trained on internet data. They're not trained on proprietary, for the most part, proprietary knowledge bases like corporate databases or military databases. They are foundation trained on Reddit and Common Crawl and just whatever garbage is on the internet, which is why they confabulate and hallucinate and lie all the time. So, if you want a narrow base, a chat that's trained on a narrow database that's more military oriented, you have a problem there because there's not enough data on actual battles that you can train it with. So, they use simulations, but simulations aren't real, and so it's not really a good idea. Plus, in order to reduce the amount of confabulations and hallucinations, you have to use massive amounts of data that have to be curated by human beings to say, well, this is actually a cat, and this is actually a dog, this is a tank, this is a rifle, this is a kid, this is a general, or whatever. Because the AI chats cannot make these types of subjective decisions. They're actually just predictive mechanisms. So there's so many avenues to military failure that, people that are actually in charge of fighting wars, including the RAND Corporation, are saying the AI battle space concept is a chimera. It won't work. It can't work. But they're being overruled by Congress and the Trump regime and Silicon Valley, who are actively waving flags of war, saying that if we don't destroy China's industrial base, we're all going to be speaking Chinese. So this brings us to the third article, which is on
Well,
the AI battle space at all.
just one moment. Sorry, I'm just going to interrupt you there momentarily because it's time for a quick ID. I wanted to remind our listeners that you're tuned to the Project Censored Show on Pacific Radio. I'm Mickey Huff. In this segment, we are delighted to bring back Peter Byrne. He's been working on a series, a monthly series with us at Project Censored that will continue through the end of this year into January. You can learn more, of course, about Peter Byrne's work as a science writer and investigative journalist at peterbyrne.info, BYRNE. The series is at projectcensored.org. And Peter, before the break, we were talking about your previous piece, the second in the series, on the Stargate fiasco. World War III will be fought inside data centers. And we continue with your most recent installment, published at the end of May, AI Battlespace, Weaponizing the 5G Internet of Things. Tell us a little bit more about the third installment on weaponizing the 5G Internet of Things. Peter Byrne.
Here's a good question for the audience. What is 5G? I'll tell you what it is. It's the fifth generation that links not only cell phones, but it links the global Internet of Things, which includes your refrigerator, all the way up to the command and control system for the United States nuclear weapons triad. It's being spread throughout the world by all military powers that are reconfiguring the basic cell phone networks, not only to improve the cell phone transmissions and connectivity, which they do, but to link together basically every object that has any AI chip embedded in it. And that can include Alexa or your headphone. If it emits electrons. It's part of the 5G network. Now, this is very interesting. If you want 5G to work, it works because it broadcasts and receives radio waves. This is the electromagnetic spectrum. The short story is that the machinery that we use can only access a finite number of them. And so we use really long wavelengths, for instance, to communicate with submarines, nuclear submarines that are under the sea. And the long wavelength has low energy and contains very little information, but it's enough to send a submarine, an instruction to fire. A very energetic short wavelength transmission can contain tremendous amounts of information, but it can only go a short distance and it can't get through obstacles. So in the United States right now, which is really far behind in terms of adopting 5G, it's far behind Japan and Europe, the primary wavelength radio spectrum for 5G to work the best in is between what is called 3 and 6 gigahertz. Gigahertz is just the amount of energy basically that is promoting the radio wave. And 3 to 6 gigahertz is the Goldilocks area for 5G. But in the United States territory, that Goldilocks frequency spectrum has been monopolized since World War II by the Department of Defense. They don't allow commercial vendors to access it. They keep it because their radar systems are tied into it and their military communication systems are tied into it. But because the new versions of cell phones and the Internet of Things need the 5G, there's a huge amount of lobbying in the United States to open up the 3 to 6 gigahertz Goldilocks zone to commercial activity. And the Pentagon is saying, no, we don't want to do that because that means that our stuff can be jammed easier, it can be spied on easier, and we need to have complete control of the spectrum. And, the commercial companies that run the United States rarely oppose the Pentagon, but in this case, they are. So that's actually still being debated at the level of the, Federal Communications Commission and elsewhere. I don't know how it's going to turn out. But the military problem that's freaking out the Pentagon is that the rest of the world, the Chinese and the Europeans, are all allowing the military and the commercial vendors to share the 3 to 6 gigahertz Goldilocks zone, which means that their computational devices and their cell phone networks are much, much superior to the ones that we have here. So the infrastructure in Europe and Japan and elsewhere for these 5G networks is largely supplied by Chinese corporations, which freaked out the United States some years ago. You may recall some news about the United States forbidding cell phone towers to have Huawei routing devices in their infrastructures, which they don't. But those are the best routing devices that there are. The United States military is afraid now that if it invades Europe, or goes there to quote unquote help somebody that's being invaded, it's going to need to tap into the 5G network over there. But its mechanism is not set up to do that. It's not set up to share that spectrum with various other militaries and corporations that are going to be in there. And there's only a certain amount of bandwidth that can be used. So, in an extremis, there's not going to be enough bandwidth for the military to operate as it wants. Now, the short story on that is that in the United States, the cell phone companies are being told by the FAA and the Pentagon they should start operating in the really high frequency zones and not in the Goldilocks zones, which means that they have to build out a lot more cell towers because the high frequency zones can't travel as far. And so, consequently, if the Congress and the FCC tell the cell phone corporations that they can have the Goldilocks zone in the United States, then the Department of Defense is going to have to go to the high frequency zone for its weapons to go overseas, which means it has to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to reconfiguring all its existing equipment. But then when it goes overseas, which is it going to use? Can it use the high frequency or the Goldilocks zone? The short story of this is that there's this kind of wet dream that they're going to have universal control through universal connectivity. And there's so many holes in that that it's a military disaster. And there's a lot of people at the RAND Corporation and inside the Pentagon that are appalled by this. They look at it as just a big spending fiasco that is actually going to enable the enemies of America that we have created to triumph over us because the Chinese are not falling into this trap.
This is pretty remarkable. By the way, this is all available at the Project Censored website for free. AI battle space weaponizing the 5G Internet of Things. Peter, we have about 3 minutes left. The next installment, Military AI Watch, explores war gaming and AI. So this is going to be the fourth of these installments. Anything you want to say about any of that article and the direction you're taking?
Well, I've just started to write it, but the hook on it is that recently the Pentagon authorized and funded this thing called Project Thunderforge, run by Anduril and Palantir and similar types, which is supposed to be able to be the chat, as it were, that can guide an AI battle or a global war that can make decisions in lieu of human beings. You know, normally you test that thing with war games before you deploy it, and it has been tested. RAND has tested it, the Pentagon has tested it, it's been repeatedly tested, and universally, without exception, all the testing scientists conclude AI is not ready for prime time. It cannot control the battle space, it breaks down, it's too fragile, and the war games always end up in nuclear exchanges because people get frustrated and they get blinded, right?
So not ready for the front lines, eh?
Right, but currently being deployed.
Well, you ended the piece. I mean, this sums it up. You ended your third installment. You say, in other words, in real life, the attraction of waging a war guided by artificial intelligence is fool's gold. It will cause Anduril, Microsoft, virtual reality headset-wearing soldiers to chase AI-generated chimeras, while Earth-connected soldiers shoot them dead. And you have this great example. Quote, "The Houthis of Yemen recently defeated the United States campaign of air and naval strikes on military and civilian enclaves by deliberately hiding from satellite eyes, successfully penetrating the world's most advanced electronic warfare system, and destroying multi-million dollar weapons with DIY methods." It sounds like another kind of Star Wars where you got Luke Skywalker flying into the Death Star to shoot the 2 meter hole.
For this, it's like some Houthi with a slingshot, basically, you know.
It's pretty riveting. It's a treasure trove of information. AI Military Watch is the name of the series. Peter Byrne, the investigative science writer that is putting it together, you can read about it at the end of each month at projectcensored.org. Again, the series is titled Military AI Watch. The next installment will be out at the end of June, and it explores war gaming with artificial intelligence. Peter Byrne, as always, thank you for joining us on the Project Censored Show today.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here. We want to smash, crash, blast, mass blast the system.